I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Two Cups of Tea. I'm Chris Heath, and today is a special family edition of the podcast. In that, I'm talking to my own dad as he entered his eighth decade on the planet. My aim is to make a brew and hear his life story while trying to discover some things I never knew about him before.
I had a wee next to George Best, elbow to elbow, and then we set fire to it. I had a thing called Snoopy Sniffer, and it was a mechanical... I went to the toilet once, there was a woman milking a goat in one of the toilets. Honestly. I knew it was time to leave when people were saying, you taught my grandma.
So here we go. Let's stick the kettle on and meet Michael Heath Sr. Here's the theme tune.
Well, you've already derailed the format of the show by hating tea.
Well, I'm sorry about that. I used to drink tea until I was about 10. But I had to have 6 spoonfuls of sugar in it to take the taste away. And then I suddenly thought...
It does defeat the object of it, doesn't it? When all your teeth fall out.
Yeah, this is not great, so...
Welcome to Two Cups of Tea. This is the Whippersnapper special, because you are a good 10 years younger than even my youngest guest. So you should feel suitably honoured.
Well, I'm in my eighth decade.
Michael Edward Heath, take us back. When were you born?
I was born in 1947.
Yeah.
And it's actually snowing today, and it was snowing the day that I was born. My mother was snowballing. 1947 was the most horrendous winter.
Was she really snowballing?
And was involved in a snowball fight and fell over, because I was 6 weeks premature. And the fact that she fell over brought my birth forward by about 6 weeks.
Really?
Really?
I'd say, no, it's the 6 weeks premature thing isn't the amazing bit. Nan snowballing is the amazing bit. I can't imagine that.
Well, she came from Greece.
Yeah. And
although she won a medal for skiing, apparently, so she would have known what snow was. What, not really used to sort of snow that you get. That particular winter was a dreadful winter, apparently.
So what did she win a medal? What for?
Skiing.
Did she?
Well, they had mountains in Greece.
No.
I mean, just... you wouldn't expect people to snow in it to ski in Italy.
I just find it even harder to imagine her skiing than having a snowball fight. 1947.
Yeah.
Where was this?
I might have been born at home. I've got very few memories before I was about 4.
What was the first memory then?
It was piloting a boat through the Corinth Canal on the bridge with the captain's hat on. And me being told that I was steering the boat.
Is that in the same sense that I used to get told that I was making the Yorkshire pudding when really I just whisked it a bit?
I mean, we were travelling from Brindisi to Piraeus in Greece.
Yeah.
I was 4, and my mother managed to sort of wangle us to go up onto the bridge. And I remember him putting the cap on my head. He also gave me half an orange to eat. So I'm eating this half an orange, and I'm then steering the boat through the Corinth Canal. And I've never forgotten that. And every time I go across the Corinth Canal now and look, I always think back to...
You want an orange? Tell me about your mum.
Well, my mum spoke 6 languages fluently, was at university in Vienna during the Second World War, hated it because of the Nazi occupation, and went back to Greece.
She is Greek.
She was Greek.
Yeah.
I've still got the paperwork with the Nazi swastika stamped on it that she was put in into a boarded train. In other words, she wasn't allowed to get off between Vienna and Athens.
Wow.
And she got a job with the British Army as an interpreter.
Mm.
My father, who was a sergeant major during the Second World War, he'd fought in North Africa, Italy, and then in Greece.
Yeah.
And she was assigned to him, and one thing, like, he apparently looked a bit like Ronald Coleman.
So she was his interpreter?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Ah, well. My father,
that sounds like a romantic movie.
Yeah.
We should write this.
He was a very sort of fair, in terms of hair colour, guy.
Yeah.
And he was like
a blonde David Niven.
With quite white skin, but he used to sort of go red one day and then he'd be bronze the next. He never burnt.
Bugger.
And so he looked quite suave with a tan.
Mm.
And obviously shouting at the soldiers on the parade ground, etc., gave him a bit more authority. And my mum, I say, was assigned to him and ended up bringing her back to England.
So that means that your mum, my nan, was in Nazi-occupied Greece. Because not many people necessarily know that Greece was occupied by the Nazis, who haven't seen Captain Corelli's Mandolin.
Yeah, my mother was a very strong character.
Yeah.
And she bore on her ankle a scar for the whole of her life. She went up to a Nazi soldier, a German soldier in the street, raised an arm and shouted, Heil Greece, instead of Heil Hitler.
That's probably a mistake.
And he kicked her on the ankle.
He kicked her on the ankle.
With his jack boot on, and she had a mark on her ankle for the rest of her life. Greece suffered tremendously by the Nazis because they took a lot of the food away. A lot of people starved to death in Greece because of the Nazi occupation.
So Grandad brings Nan back from Greece.
Yeah, which is a bit of a shock. Massive culture shock because the family in Greece, my grandfather was a chemist. He'd studied at Berlin University. He spoke German fluently.
Mm.
And he used to go out at night on behalf of the resistance movement spreading messages.
Really?
Yeah, and if he didn't know the correct password for the Greeks at that time, if they'd found him, they would have shot him, killed him. So he had to know the correct password that night if he was stopped.
So it reset each night or something?
Yeah. And if the Germans spoke to him, he would speak to them in fluent German and say he was half German, half Greek.
Mm.
And he used to go out taking...
Because he was fluent in German?
They had a radio in the basement of the house, which they used to listen to London. And he'd go out taking messages and so on. And they even had two servants still during the war.
This sounds like the proper resistance with secret radios.
Oh, it was. I mean, I've been to the house. I mean, when I went to Greece, when I was after the Corinth Canal, I lived at that house for about six, seven months. I had my fifth birthday there.
Yeah.
And it was it's now a huge bank. The Nazis wanted to take that house. And they were persuaded to have the house next door, which belonged to my grandfather's father. And so they kept this house, which was a huge house.
Yeah.
And they still had two servants during the war.
So hang on. So the Nazis took over the house next door to a house that in the basement had the resistance operating out of it in the basement with radios.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds like a really risky thing to have.
Perhaps, well, I mean, if you're going to speed past the police station, because that's the one place you probably won't get caught.
Yeah. So Peterborough was, for all sorts of reasons, Peterborough, I imagine, was a culture shock.
Huge.
For Nan, your mum.
She was listening to the weather forecast one day, and they said that there would be scattered showers.
Yeah.
Now, the word scatter in Greek means...
Poo-poo.
Yeah, as in the word scatological, it comes from that. And she thought, my God, what sort of country have I come from if it's going to rain?
Poo-poo.
Exactly. She didn't know the word scattered. Yeah. She does the scattered showers.
And I tell you what, it's certain days in Peterborough when it's a bit miserable and rainy, you look out the window and you think, it could happen. So after they came back from the war, they got a house in Peterborough?
We lived in a street called Church Walk, which was sort of fairly central. And they lived there, or we lived there for, I don't know exactly how long, but we then moved in with my grandparents, which was not ideal.
And is that when you were little?
Yeah.
All right.
That's when, and they then moved into Birch Tree Avenue, where I grew up, probably the early 50s, because they built that estate basically for a lot of the people coming back from the war.
Mm.
They built two or three in Peterborough, as I'm sure they did in other parts of the country.
So then at this point, you're now how old?
Well,
you moved into Birch Tree Avenue.
Yeah, well, so I'm perhaps about one or two. But I mean, I didn't start school till I was nearly six because I was in Greece. And I,
why were you in Greece?
Well, my mother hadn't been back since she left and went to see her father.
Yeah.
And her three sisters that she'd left. So she was partly homesick and she left at the end of the war, and this is 1952.
Mm.
So that's a period of 6-7 years or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And she hadn't been. So, and it was way before charter flights, and we couldn't have afforded a proper plane there. So we went by train to Venice and then further down. We were actually on the Orient Express.
Did you really?
Yeah, yeah. A couple of times, because we went to Greece that way. When there were the four children, it would have been more ludicrous to have afforded plane fare, etc. So we used to do that on this occasion to Venice, and then got a train down to Brindisi, and then across to Greece that way. And I say I had my fifth birthday in Greece, and it was after. So I started school a little bit later than I perhaps ought to have done.
And that's held you back your whole life, hasn't it?
Not in the slightest.
I'm joking.
Well, I always loved school, so yeah. I mean, it wasn't as if I felt I was missing it. But
yeah. So you mentioned the four children going across. That's you, so you're one of four.
Yeah. I'm the eldest, obviously.
Obviously the eldest.
Also, my brother Philip was between 2 and 3 years old. And when we came back...
He was second eldest.
Yeah, he's second. He couldn't speak English. He didn't speak English. He used to speak Greek.
Mm.
And when the next door neighbours that we had, he would be playing with one of the boy called Brian next door. And Brian would come round to my mum and say, Philip's just said this. What did he say? And she had to translate for it. And it was a little time before he was able to learn to speak English properly again.
So the people on the estate would have thought that he was, you know, like a little migrant child you're taking in. So, brothers and sisters, let's do a roll call.
Well, my mother always wanted a daughter.
Yeah.
And then she had three boys in a row.
Oh, right.
I think when my sister was born, thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
Actually, I'd have to keep trying for any more after that. So
she was the Victoria Beckham of the estate in Peterborough. So you had three boys, and so names, let's go through names.
Well, Philip was second, then Paul, and my sister Barbara.
Did you act like an eldest brother, as you recall?
I used to fight a bit with Philip. He used to take all my toys to bits. Because he was very mechanical. I'd like a pre-scale extra. So I had a set of cars that would go round a figure eight and what have you.
Yeah.
And he used to take them to bits and then perhaps not quite be able to put them back together again.
Well, that's because the fun bit is taking them to bits.
So we did used to fight a bit over that. When I was a bit older...
How much younger was he than you?
3 years.
Right.
And then my other brother was another 3 years. And my sister was then, I think, 18 months after. I did perhaps tend to look after my sister a bit more, especially when I got a bit older.
That feels natural, doesn't it?
Especially when I was doing my teacher training. I used to get letters and stuff about projects that she was doing. And
So you're 7 or 8 years older than her?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're now 5 or 6, and you're now at school. I mean, did you have any favourite toys that were the things that you most remembered and you most liked playing with?
I had a thing called Snoopy Sniffer, and it was a mechanical dog.
Yes.
That used to sort of go up and down when you went after you went. It was a clockwork thing. It was a metal thing. I remember my...
Snoopy Sniffer.
Okay. I'm sure if you Google it...
Did it go on a track? I'm going to Google it now. Did it go on a track?
No, it would just go on anywhere.
Right. Snoopy Sniffer.
Yeah. That's it.
There he is.
Look at Snoopy. And the tail used to go boing, because it was on a metal... twangy thing. You know, so, and it used to just go up and down like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Like a bride's nightie.
And my dad made me a boat for bath time.
He made you a boat?
Out of wood. He used to call me Mickey DeMoke when I was little, whatever that meant, and that was the name of the boat.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so he named the boat Mickey DeMoke?
Yeah, yeah.
So you would have painted that on at the... Was it at the front end? I don't know if that's the bow or the stern. So tell me about your dad. Tell me about Grandad Jim.
He was... He was quite a strong character, but he was very, very quiet.
Hmm.
It's almost anything for a quiet life. And the job that he had, I mean, he'd served in the Royal Engineers, defusing bombs and stuff in minefields during the war.
Wow.
And he told me some horrendous stories about his friends and things that were killed, etc. So he'd always, worked in engineering. And the main job that he did in his early years was with crowning machines, putting the tops on beer bottles or other bottles. So the machine would go round and it would put a crown on. But he didn't do that in England. He worked at a firm called Peter Brotherhood, who made engines for ships during the war.
Mm.
And he would go to different countries. So he'd be away he'd go to Belgium for a couple of weeks or Denmark.
Yeah.
Even went to Greece for a month one winter, which made my mum a bit jealous. Well, we used to love it, though, when he went away, because we always got a really nice present when he came back. So we used to look forward to my dad going wherever it was.
Yeah.
He used to bring us something back. And he did that for a while. And he then got offered a job in Japan, which was a 6 months contract.
Wow. So I'm guessing it must have paid quite well for the time.
Well, it would have done. My mother said, unless we can all come, you can't go. Because 6 months. Cause remember, there's four kids my mum's bringing up.
Yeah.
She said no, and he didn't do that, and he stopped doing that. And he then progressed on the staff at
Peter Brothers.
Yeah, which meant he didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
I'm sure he used to enjoy...
Not always being in a house with four kids in it.
And because it was usually working for companies that made beer or whatever it was.
It sounds like hell.
Yes, it was. And I was too young to benefit from stuff that he was able to bring back.
Did you get on with him?
We used to go fishing together, and it would be Dad, I've got my hook caught on the bottom. He'd come across and my hook that was on the bottom. He would fix it out for me. I caught very few fish, but it was really good. I mean, we used to do it seriously because we'd go at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, wow. That is seriously.
And there was one occasion when we went and we were sat fishing at Fotheringay.
Mm.
And then he said to me, you see that across there? And there's just a pile of bricks and a little metal fence around it. And he said that was Fotheringay Castle where Mary Queen of Scots was executed.
Really?
Yeah. And I didn't know that that's what that. And it was while we were
sticking out of the water, or
no, it's on the bank.
Oh, okay.
It's on the bank. I caught a tench, which was about 5 or 6 pounds, big tench, and we were weighing it.
Mm.
And as we were weighing it, it slipped and went back in the river. Now, apparently a tench is a very voracious fish.
Yeah.
And nobody caught anything for the rest of the day because we'd gone in a van. There were quite a group of us.
You mean because it ate all of the other fish?
Or frightened them away, a bit like a pike might. So there were about 6 or 8 people and me, a little boy,
with
my dad. And I'd caught this great big fish. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Splash. Oh, dear. And nobody... And I'm sure they were all cursing me under their breath that I dropped this fish.
I bet they were.
One year, always like digging,
yeah,
and still to this day, we had a big willow tree at the bottom of our garden, and we dug this pit, and then we thought, why don't we tunnel underneath into Aldridge's house, and they started digging on their side.
Mm.
And so we dug a huge tunnel. We built an igloo 1 year with snow, and it lasted for weeks after the snow had gone.
Yeah.
So we used to like to do all those sort of things. Anyway, we dug this so we could get into Aldred's underneath the fence and come in their garden if we wanted. What we did, we put a board over the top so you couldn't see what it was, and then put some bits from the willow tree.
Sounds like a nightmare waiting to happen. Go on.
Yes. Well, it was for poor old Peter Aldred.
And was Peter Aldred the dad?
He was the dad.
Right.
Because he went down to the bottom of the garden and he walked on this wooden thing there and he fell into the hole.
Oh, God.
And he wasn't too happy. And we had to fill it in, and it was very hard to fill it in because a lot of this had been compacted, and you
could, yeah.
But those are the sort of things that you sort of, you'd go out and you'd dig holes, you'd play.
What were your other neighbours like?
Well, we used to play cricket, and if you hit it over Aldred's,
yeah,
you got a six. Next door there was the Woods family, and there was a lad there called Geoffrey Woods,
yeah,
who had his own radio station. Geoffrey Woods.
Well, he'd work at a radio station.
No. He was his own little radio. I think
he's in his bedroom?
Yeah, you could only hear it. We could just about pick the signal where we were.
Next door?
Well, about 20 metres away.
Did he have a lot of records?
Radio Geoffrey Woods.
And it was called Radio Geoffrey Woods?
Yeah. I don't know why he called it that. If you hit the ball over there, you got a 12. And it was Stratton's next door to that. And if you hit it over there, you used to get 24 and you were out. But you had to go and fetch the ball.
So that was a maximum score of 24?
Yeah.
And then you were out. Fetch your own ball?
Well,
seems very unfair to bow out.
Yeah, but Stratton's weren't too keen to give you the ball back. So it was, I'm not going, you go.
And they were miserable, were they?
Unlike Mr. Gifford, who lived the other side of us, if you snicked an edge when it went over the fence behind you,
yeah,
he used to burn the tennis balls.
Did he?
Or whatever ball you were using, yes.
Did you have like a little gang of mates who were you?
Yes. Now, I was one of the very few kids who didn't go to the rec and play football.
Yeah.
I hated sport.
Did you?
You might find that hard to believe.
I do, considering you play all sport now.
When you know what career I had in sport.
Yeah.
But there were a group of us, and we all passed our 11+.
Yeah.
And we all went to Deacon School together.
Yeah.
There was Keith Lines, Wiggy, that was Brian Smith, called him Wiggy, Dave Bishop, and me.
Mm.
So there was the four of us.
So Deacon's was a grammar school?
Grammar school, yeah.
Yeah.
And we all went to school, the same school together.
Mm.
Dave Bish foiled a bank robbery.
Really?
Yeah. Outside the Broadway cinema, there was a bank.
Yeah.
And this guy robbed the bank, and Bish ran after this guy, tackled him, held him down till the police came. He then got absolutely drunk out of his head and got arrested. And when it came to, he had to go to court. And when he told the story, the judge actually applauded him and let him off.
Oh, good. So if Deacon's was an old grammar school, then that did he have quite a fusty old headmaster or
William Rainsford Upcott Gill?
So yes.
He was great. He used to have huge, great, like more than perhaps 24-inch bottom trousers. He'd be on the stage and you could see he'd got different colour socks on, because I'm sure he couldn't see what he was putting on when he got dressed in the morning.
Yeah.
And he had a really old-fashioned way of talking. My mum used to do tees for when I eventually did play rugby at school.
Mm.
My mum used to go and do the tees there because we had a cooked meal when other visiting teams came, so she used to help with that. I mean, I've got a story. You know, I said before I hated sport.
Mm.
When I was in the third year, we used to have house matches.
Yeah,
and I was in a house called Danes, and we were playing Britons, and Britons were short. And I didn't get picked to play for my own house. I played for Britain's.
You played against your own house?
Yeah, and I played prop. And I scored 6 tries. I was so angry. This is on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
On the Saturday, I'm in the under-15 team playing for my school.
Yeah.
And I never looked back. And I played rugby throughout that particular time.
Mm.
And then at college. Oh, then at Peterborough.
Yeah.
Because we had a teacher who... Peterborough used to have... first, second, third, fourth, fifth, used to run 5 teams.
Mm.
And he was captain of Peterborough third team. And if they were short, he used to get people from school to go and play in his team. So I started playing rugby at Peterborough when I was 16, and then on into my sixth form. But before that time, I just hadn't. I just was not sports minded at all. I also played in goal for the school hockey team. I played tennis at school for the school team.
Just not football.
Well, they didn't play football.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Which so that's the thing. Well. You probably thought you hated sport, and it turns out it's just football you hated playing.
Yeah.
From what I know of you, it sounds like you need sports to have a little bit more savagery about them. So you're in goal at hockey.
Yeah.
You like playing rugby. You suddenly score. So I just think you need something where it's less about finesse and more about, you know.
I play tennis.
Brute force. So you mentioned NME earlier on.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, I know because, you know, you're my dad. But that's hugely important to you, isn't it, music?
Always like music. Because I used to listen to Radio Luxembourg in those days, sort of crackly old reception, etc. Yeah, right from... I started buying records 2 years before we had a radiogram. So I'm 11. I bought Peter Gunn by Duane Eddy, a Bobby Darin single, because I like the flip side was called Bull Moose, and it was fantastic piano saxophone thing. And I bought a third one, I can't remember, when I first started at Deakin School. And it wasn't until 1961. And the first record I bought then was Big Bad John. By Jimmy Dean, I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. We bought three or four records when we got our gramophone.
So how often were you able to buy records? Because the thing is, were you on pocket money?
But I had a part time job. I used to work on a Saturday in a shop called Levy's. It was then called Crooks, Gentleman's Tailor Shop.
Oh, okay.
So I used to work on a Saturday there, and I used to get paid about 25 bob.
That's why you fold shirts like you do then.
That's a skill I learned from my part-time job. So, so when I was doing that, I was able to buy records. Although it was mainly singles then, because LPs used to cost like 29.11 or 32 shillings or something.
Yeah.
You know, £1.50 or whatever it is today.
Were there any at school? Were there any school bullies? I know that there were. Please tell me the name of the school bully and what his signature move was.
Do you mean Gasworks Brown?
Yes, I mean Gasworks Brown. Why was he called Gasworks Brown?
Because he used to get the younger boys and sit on them and fart in their face.
Gasworks Brown. That's the most Beano name I've ever heard. It's so brilliant.
I used to run the school film club.
Oh, right.
With another guy. And we used to choose the films, and we used to invite girls from County Grammar School and also Westwood House. So there wasn't just a pretext to meet girls, although that was...
Although it worked.
Yes. So we used to do plays with them. Ivan did ballroom dancing at just for a term.
Wow, yeah. I can't even imagine what that must look like. You know that bit in Young Frankenstein where they do putting on the Ritz? Did it look like that?
Listen, I and my partner once had to demonstrate a spin turn for the quick step.
Oh, my God.
Because we did it so well.
Do you have a number on your back?
No.
Oh, my God.
I know.
I can't imagine
that. The best bit of it was there was a Polish woman that ran the thing. She was called Miss Tanocek.
Yeah.
Not Mr. Miss Tanocek. She was beautiful.
Yeah.
And we used to, and I think all the lads from school went mainly because of her.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously, you could have no chance of.
No. So you had your part time job. So how often could you get new records? What kind of thing were you getting?
Well, I bought a lot of. I was very much into the Shadows.
Because this is as rock and roll. Because this is as rock and roll is erupting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you're there at the you know, this is when music did start to massively change.
Just before the Beatles and the Rolling Stones came out. So Cliff Richard and the Shadows were the big act. And I've always liked Hank Marvin.
Yeah.
Every time a Shadows record came out, I bought one. So I used to buy a lot of instrumentals, the Spotniks, the Tornadoes, So it was mainly instrumental records that I bought.
I've never heard of the Spotniks.
They had...
Not the Sputniks.
No, Spotniks. I think they might have been Swedish. They had a record...
That's probably how they pronounce Sputnik.
The Orange Blossom Special, I think they did. It was a speeded-up version of whatever it was.
Yeah.
And they were all dressed up like spacemen.
Oh, really?
I remember thinking about it now, yeah. Of course, on black and white TV.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they are not... They might have had one or two. And, of course, the American group, The Ventures.
Yeah.
That were like the...
I've heard of The Ventures. Yeah. I just never heard of the Spacemen Spotniks. Yeah. What was that like at the time, you know, in schools and in discos and stuff like that, when stuff like The Beatles, and obviously in your case, you're obviously a Stones fan more than a Beatles fan. What was that like when that first kicked off? Because I think it's hard to imagine now just how much everything changed with that kind of music. Did your dad like rock and roll, for example?
No.
What did he like? Did he find it baffling?
Well, I don't think he liked South Pacific.
Yeah.
And it was that sort of thing that he liked. But my school was, you had to have your tie tied properly, and you weren't allowed to have your sideboards too long.
Yeah.
And there would be a prefect on the door when you went into assembly. And if you weren't properly, you would have to sort of adjust your clothing, et cetera, et cetera. But when the Rolling Stones came out with their unkempt appearance,
yeah,
we used to try and grow our sideboards a little bit longer and longer and longer, just a tenth of an inch next time you trim them, and then grow them a little bit longer.
Yeah.
So it was hardly what you'd call major revolution.
Yeah.
But it was trying to get, if you could get your sideboards below the bottom of your ears.
Yeah, because 1962, you would have been, what, 15, 16? 15.
15, yeah. I mean, they used to have youth clubs, and youth clubs used to play music.
Yeah.
So somebody would have a record player and play music, and you didn't necessarily dance to it, so you might be playing...
Hey, you're playing ping pong.
You'd be playing ping pong or badminton or whatever.
You can't dance when you're playing ping pong.
You know, so, yeah, so, I mean, I didn't go to,
discos, but youth clubs and stuff. Yeah, is that where you first started hearing it? Do you remember where you were when you first heard a Stones record or heard of them?
You know, I don't think I do, and that's awful. But we used to have parties when you were 14, 15, 16, and you went to a party.
At someone's house?
At someone's house.
Yeah.
It was always the Rolling Stones, the parties I went to, it was always Rolling Stones records.
Yeah.
There are one or two records that I've heard. There was a guy at college who came through once. And he came, I've just heard this fantastic record. It's called River Deep Mountain High, and it's by Argentina Turner. Because he'd listened to it on Luxembourg. Argentina Turner.
Oh, it's not on Radio Luxembourg.
Yeah. It would have been Radio Caroline.
Right.
Pirate radio. And he went, Argentina Turner.
When you got older, did you still have contact with your relatives out in Greece or Greek family?
Right, when I was five, one of my grandfather's brothers, who didn't speak English, Tasso, his name was, used to take me to the Cineac once a week. And the Cineac used to show Mickey Mouse films, cartoons. Yeah. And he used to take... So we used to go...
Steamboat Willie. Do you remember when that was premiered?
Shut up. About 1927, was it?
Yeah.
So he used to take me to the cinema once a week.
Yeah.
And then we'd go out and have a meal or whatever it was.
When you were five?
I always remembered that. And then there was a cousin, or one of my mother's cousins. We called him uncle, but he was... he was actually the son of another one of my grandfather's brothers.
And this is your uncle's status.
He loved the Shadows as well. I used to send him singles.
Yeah. How much older than you was he? Was he like a young uncle?
Yeah, he always seemed young, yes, yeah. He must have been 20, 30 years old, I don't know. But he was such a nice, kind guy. The sad thing is, when I moved to Greece about 11 years or so ago, I never got a chance to see him, and he died. Oh, and I shall cry. When I found out that he died, and I hadn't been to see him, I was so upset because he had a heart of gold. You know, would do anything for anybody. And he loved his radio, his shortwave radio. Whenever I used to go to his house, he'd say, listen to this. This is Tokyo or somewhere, and he'd find something and play. You know, he was like a little kid like I was sometimes.
Yeah. Didn't you go to visit him when you were 16 or something?
Can't tell that story.
Yes, you can.
I can't.
Of course you can.
People will hear it. I spent, before I started sixth form, I spent 8 weeks in Greece, which meant I was 2 weeks late starting my A-levels.
Yeah.
And I'd gone by train on my own.
Was that the Orient Express again?
It wasn't. It was the same route, but it wasn't the Orient Express at that particular time. And it was still Yugoslavia in those days, which you went through. And even though you got a ticket... In Yugoslavia, the locals used to get on with goats and sheep. I went to the toilet once. There was a woman milking a goat in one of the toilets. Honestly. Because they stopped at all... And so people would get on at one station and get off two or three stops later.
Yeah. I've seen worse on the St. Neots train.
Yes. Anyway, so I had 8 weeks there, and I stayed with Stathis's parents. But because Stathis used to work during the day, and sometimes he wouldn't come home until quite late, so we'd go out. We wouldn't go out till about 10 o'clock at night, and we used to go to places and we'd be out till 2 or 3 o'clock and have a kebab on the way home and all this sort of thing. And then for three weeks we were going to go to Kos, and I can't tell the story, Chris.
I don't think I know the story.
Oh, I'm not going to tell it then. There's a tradition in Greece for when you've got someone who's young, the father takes the young son out to a prostitute.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, they used to, but perhaps it doesn't happen now. Stathis and we're walking around, and there's this really pretty young woman there, and Stathis is talking to her.
Yeah.
And he's telling her that I'm 19.
Yeah.
You know, he's getting there. And I said, "Ohi, ime veka exi, I'm 16.
Yeah.
And she walked off. And it was only a long time later I suddenly thought, that's what it was. He was trying.
That's not too bad.
Is it?
No. Okay. If you'd done it, that would be... I'm really glad you didn't tell me that story. I thought, my first time was with a hooker.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When I was at school, I always wanted to be a policeman, always wanted to be a detective.
Yeah.
There was a TV programme called No Hiding Place.
Yeah.
It's on a Monday night about 8 or 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock, I think it was.
Yeah.
Chief Inspector Lockhart, I think it was.
Yeah.
Is there an actor called Clive Francis?
There is, yeah.
Well, I think it was his father.
Oh, okay.
That was Chief Inspector Lockhart.
Mm.
And I loved that programme, and I've always liked police dramas.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to be a detective.
Mm.
Now, I wore glasses. I went for a medical, which I passed. There was some written thing I had to do. And then I went for an eye test. And I've turned around to go. The guy hadn't said anything. And he then said to me, do you wear glasses? I thought, well, I can't lie to a policeman. So I said, yes. And since I said yes, I knew it wouldn't be accepted. You could not wear glasses in the police force then. I think it was a few months later, they relaxed the rule.
That's ridiculous.
The only careers advice you had in those days was what you want to do, where do you want to be? Mm. And I had a meeting with him, and he said, what do you want to do? And I said, I haven't got a clue. He said, have you ever thought about teaching? And I said, no. He said, look, here's six colleges. Mm. Why don't you apply for them and see what happens? And I sent an invitation, sent the application off.
Mm.
And within about 3 or 4 days, I got an interview,
mm.
and I got in. So that was how I became a teacher. I'd never thought about it before.
What was the school? What was the college?
It was part of Keele University. It was called Madeley College, near Stoke-on-Trent.
In halls, or were you in shared?
Yeah, no, I was in a hall of residence all 3 years.
Did you have like a housekeeper or people who...
I was on the ground floor of a, I think, seven-story building.
Mm.
And my cleaner, even when I was teaching later on, I always used to look after the cleaner because I think a cleaner is very important to keep on the right side. I did a teaching practice in the local village, so I knew her and her husband.
Mm.
And we were out one night in a pub. We were right on the Cheshire border. We were actually in Staffordshire. We went into this pub in Cheshire, and I saw her in the pub with somebody who wasn't her husband.
Oh, looking cosy.
And I just sort of went, raised my hand and didn't say anything. And now they lived on a farm. The next day, she brings me some Cheshire cheese in, fresh Cheshire cheese from her farm. She used to keep me in eggs, cheese, and whatever else. And it was never discussed, but I'm sure it was, I'm bringing you this so that you won't.
Please don't tell my husband.
I wrote to Manchester United, said we were doing a documentary, and there was a bloke called Phil Glover, who was the year below me, and we were quite big mates, and he was a big Man United fan. And we went to a Man United, we got press tickets to go to Manchester United to film a game. And we met everybody before the game, met Matt Busby.
Really?
Yeah. Shook hands with Matt Busby, met his son. I had a wee next to George Best, elbow to elbow.
Wow. Did you touch elbows? Wow.
Have you got anything to report about that? Or you drew what they say.
And Kenneth Wolstenholme of the famous...
I think it's all over.
Yeah. He was the commentator. We met him and some guys from the Sunday Times and whatever. And Kenneth Wolstenholme came over and he said, would you like my autograph? And I thought, no. You don't. If somebody offers you, you know, Phil, he got his autograph.
Yeah.
I'll
tell you why, Dad, because he was being polite. You obviously decided not to be.
I thought you don't. You know, you are.
No, I mean, don't get me wrong. That is a weird thing to do.
So I said no.
Hmm.
Not because I don't like you.
Was this pre-They Think It's All Over Days? Yeah, it was. Because
thinking about...
Because I'll tell you what, had it been post-They Think It's All Over Days,
I might have said yes.
Yeah.
And... We didn't film from the halfway line. We went behind each goal.
Mm.
And I was behind the goal where Alex Stepney was in goal the first half. And some of the away fans...
So you filmed from behind the goal?
Yeah, right. Mm. We're actually virtually on the goal line. And Alex Stepney was the goalkeeper at the end I was. And... I've still got to this day a coin that one of the away fans threw at Stepney. Used to throw coins at the goalkeeper in those days to try and put the goalkeeper off. And I kept one of these. I'm aiming at me. I'll be aiming at the goalkeeper. So we've got film from either end, rather like a tennis match rather than halfway. And we put the two films together because Phil was down the other end. I got George Best scoring a goal with a great long shot, and he got him scoring the goal in closer. So we put the two together.
So you filmed, that's Russian.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I used that as part of my, because you could have a project you could end in as a film assignment.
Yeah.
And I had that film.
Have you still got that?
Right. And this is the sad bit.
Oh.
Phil Glover, if you're out there still. He wrote to me when I'd started teaching, saying, "Have you still got that film? Because I'm going to use it this year for my assignment."
Yeah.
And I sent it to him, and I never got it back.
Oh, bloody hell. And now, I don't want to get all goodbye Mr. Chips here, but do you remember your first day as a teacher?
I taught at one of the last two all-age schools in the country.
All
ages from 5 to 15 was school leaving age when I started teaching.
Wow.
You can leave 15. You started at 5 and you went through to 15 in the same school.
They were the last two, there were only two left in the whole country.
Now, I...
Was that the norm, that they were all schools but all age?
Well, many, many years ago, they used to have a lot more of them.
Anyway. Right, okay. Right.
I actually contacted, because I'd finished, in your last year, you finish in, like, early June or whatever it was. Mm. I'd got the job lined up, contacted the head and said, could I come in and do the last month before the end of term?
Yeah.
And, you know, to get used to the school and what I'm doing, etc. And they said yes. And not only that, they started to pay me. And the beauty of that was my contract started before the end of the summer holiday. Now, so I got paid for the summer holiday as well.
Oh, that's very good.
And having done things like potato picking and fruit picking in the previous summers,
yeah.
to do nothing...
Apart from sitting in the garden with some lemonade.
That's what I did. And my timetable was great because I used to teach the secondary part of the school.
Mm. Did you have to teach any under...
Yeah, I'm just going to say that.
Oh, sorry.
What I did was, it was basically the secondary, which is what I was trained for. But two afternoons a week, I taught 7 to 8 year olds. And in those days, you could virtually do what you wanted. And I loved it because you were the first person to mind you, you could be the first person to tell them something when they're 16 as well.
Yeah.
But to be the first person, and I did a lot of my film stuff. So one thing that we did, I got them all to do paintings of a particular event. And we had tape recorder and got the kids to speak about whatever it was. So that was the soundtrack. So when you played the film back, because I filmed all these, paintings and things, and the soundtrack is their commentary on the reel-to-reel tape that we had. And then the best thing that we did the Fire of London, and we made London out of matchboxes. So you could get about 4 or 5 matchboxes, and then you have like a cantilever bit, so you've got a bit that protrudes, put the roof on it. And so I'm teaching about the Fire of London. And you could do it 2 afternoons a week, and it could last for 4 or 5 weeks, whatever you were doing. And then we set fire to it. So we had a real fire.
Really?
Yes.
Ah, brilliant.
You probably won't be allowed to do that now.
No. Do you know what? You absolutely wouldn't be allowed to do that. And then we torched it.
And because we looked at architecture and the half-timbered buildings and what they were made of and wattle and daub. I was teaching history as well.
Yes.
And
but just as a guess, what's their favourite bit, do you think, learning about wattle and daub, or was it when you set fire to it?
I'll get back to you on that.
I can imagine. So your first school was at an all-age school.
Yeah.
Where next?
So I went for... an interview at East Home Boys, East Home Girls.
East Home Girls.
Neil Tennant, he was there. And I walked around East Home Girls School and there wasn't a sound.
Yeah.
And it was so quiet, I thought, I can't teach here. I went to East Home Boys and it was quite a lot different. And I thought, I can't teach here either. I was offered jobs at both.
Yeah.
And the head at the Duke of Edinburgh School in Thorney contacted the head at Stanground and said, I've got a young teacher here, blah, 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 blah. And so I went for an interview at Stanground. So, I started at Stanground, where I was for 33 or 34 years.
Mm.
For a very long time. I knew it was time to leave when people were saying, "You taught my grandma." Used to get a lot of, "You taught my mum" or "You taught my dad."
Yeah.
But when it was, "You taught my grandma," I thought, this is time to go.
In amongst the teaching, you got married.
Yes.
How did you meet my mother?
At the rugby club.
Yeah.
It was towards the end of October. There used to be a fair... that travelling fair that came to Peterborough.
Yeah.
And it used to meet in what was called Fair Meadow.
Right.
Near the football ground. There's a group of... There used to be a lot of nurses used to sort of come down to the rugby club.
Mm. We're trying to hoover up a nice rugby player.
And one of Sandra's friends poured a pint of beer all over me.
Oh. Do you remember why?
And I don't think she does either. Pat Green.
Yeah.
Who married... Whose son is Jimmy Mystery. Because Sandra used to babysit.
Yeah.
And Sandra felt a bit aggrieved, and she came across the sort of... Apparently she quite liked my bottom, she said. I don't know what was wrong with her face, but... and they said, who's coming to the fair? I said, I'm still a bit wet. I said, no, no. And Sandra said she wasn't going to go either.
Mm.
And other people went. So we said, bring us a coconut back. And somebody did bring us a coconut back later in the evening, because we were there quite a long time. And sort of got chatting to Sandra. And then it was time to go. So we kissed goodnight, and we arranged to meet on a Tuesday. And she... didn't remember the kiss goodnight, which I thought was a good sign. And she was at the nurse's home at that particular time.
Yeah.
And one night we were, the Grange, which was a sports field not far away from the hospital. We walked across there, and we sat on the swings, and it was after 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And we looked at all the houses with the curtains shut and the light shining through them, and said, "Should we get married?" Oh, I've said that.
You
and,
said it.
Yeah. And someone said, "Yeah." So I said, "All right,
is that really how you said it?"
Honestly, something like that, yeah. I didn't say, "Will you marry me?" No, no. We were looking at all the houses where people lived, and we were just sitting on the swing.
Yeah.
I think it was about midnight. When I went home, I'll never forget this, because my dad's halfway up a little stepladder doing some wallpapering, and my mum's in the kitchen. And I said to my dad, "Guess what?" And he said, "What?" I said, "I'm going to get married." And my mum said, "Do you think we could meet the girl first?" Because they never met Sandra.
I can imagine her saying that.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
So we arranged for Sandra to come round. And
how did that go? Can you remember that?
Well, the big laughing point of it all was there's some glasses there that had... There were like...
Drinking glasses.
Drinking glasses.
Yeah.
That had little sort of half balls underneath them. They were sort of...
Bobbly underneath.
Yeah, quite sturdy glasses.
Yeah.
Barbara nicked them from the nurse's home. And Sandra said, "I had a party and somebody nicked my glasses." It was my sister. So, Barbara! And nicked... So that came out on the first...
So basically, she came round and was given a glass that had been stolen from her.
Yeah.
By your sister.
Yeah, because Sir Barbara had been to this party at the nurse's home. Well, we were going to get married on May the 20th, which was after the rugby season finished.
Yes.
But Sandra's brother invited some of his friends to our wedding for May the 13th, which meant I had to miss the... seven-a-side tournament at the end of the season. So I thought, wait till the end of the rugby season.
Yeah.
And so that's why we got married on May the 13th rather than the 20th. But I remember there were people in the village of Stilton that were saying, you know, she must be up the duff or something. You know, why is she getting married so quickly? Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
The way that people's tongues wag or what have you.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, far from the truth.
Yeah, because it took ages before you had me.
Well, we were told we couldn't have children.
Yeah.
Which was a little bit upsetting.
Well, especially it would have made this podcast impossible.
Yes. And then you were born, weighing 11 and a half pounds.
Yeah.
I'd actually been at a football match the night before Sandra was on. I'd played tennis with my mate Terry.
Yeah. And Terry Jones.
Yeah. And Sandra was lying in the park on a bench because the ball hit the bump at one point, but not very hard.
I remember that. That's what that was.
And I went to a Peterborough football match because my name got called out. Yeah. Well, the third time, I thought perhaps it was important. Because there was no question that you were going to be born that day.
Yeah.
So I went out the football ground.
And yet there was no question I was going to be born that day, and yet it took you three times to be called by the football announcer Tannoy thing.
Oh, no, it was ring the hospital. So I rang the hospital and said, "She's been admitted." And they said, "No, nothing happening for hours yet." So I went to the Whittle Way, had a couple of pints and a pie.
Yeah, because I mean, whilst this, you know, whilst in today's audiences that might sound horrific,
and like you should have been there. But if one born every minute is not. It's not. That's not how it was then. No. I don't. People weren't scrub up and present at the birth, were they? You weren't there when I was coming out, were you?
Yeah.
Were you?
Yeah, but it wasn't until the next day.
Oh, okay.
I went back to my parents' house, which was not that far to go. On the way home, I found a dead rabbit.
Right.
Right. And when I got home, I knocked on the door to go in because it was locked, because it was late-ish then. And Barbara, my sister, opened the door and I said, I've got some good news and some bad news.
Right.
I said, the good news is she's had it.
Yeah.
But the bad news, and held the rabbit up by the ear, it might have been a hare, held it up by the ears and said, it was a rabbit. And my sister fainted.
Well, even if it wasn't a horrible thing to do, you were holding a dead rabbit you'd found in the street. That was it was never going to go well.
No, but I've always been a bit of a joker, I think.
Okay, I don't know how we segue out of my birth. That's a new one in this podcast. So let's talk about the end of teaching and the next chapter. So you retired. How old were you when you retired from teaching?
15. I took early retirement because you could retire at 60.
Yeah.
But by early retirement, it was only a few months early. And we'd been to a place called Stupa, which is mainland Greece and the Peloponnese, 1995, 1998, 99. And we then said, why don't we see if we can find somebody who can help us, you know, find a house?
Mm.
And we met the guy that we thought was the local ice cream parlour guy, who turned out to be a civil engineer, and that was it was a pastime doing the ice cream thing. And he rang somebody up who he'd built a house for, and we got invited round that afternoon or that evening, went and had a look at this house, which was fantastic, and then went back to Dimitri, his name was, and with a guy called Vangeli, spent 3 days taking us around looking at various sites where a house could be built. And cut a long story short, we chose a particular site and had the house built there.
Mm. I like to end talking about teaching, I think, you know, because it was something you did for so long. And, you know, as much as I take the mick, everyone I've ever bumped into, you know, around Yaxley or Peterborough, who you were a teacher of, has always had nothing but lovely things to say about what you were like as a teacher and that you were good fun and, you know, that they learned lots and stuff like that. What was it that you loved about teaching?
I never called it going to work.
Mm.
I always called it going to school.
Yeah.
And I always said, if it ever feels like going to work, then that'll be the time to go.
Yeah.
So I never left school, really, because I liked school when I was a kid.
Mm.
Enjoyed college. I've always enjoyed the idea of study and doing assignments and what have you. And because I was a history teacher, and people think, oh, history's just a load of old dates, tried to do the opposite for that and to get people to think about, I mean, everything is that you live is history.
Mm.
So history is everywhere. Look at questions that you can ask about things and look at examples of things. And it doesn't matter whether it was 1066 or 1067 or 1068 or whatever. You know, the dates aren't that important.
Mm.
It's the social history. It's the reasons why things happen.
Yeah.
Because that's the way that you can interpret what's going to happen in the future, because everything is cyclical.
Thank you for being on Two Cups of Tea.
Or even One Cup of Coffee.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for being on One Cup of Coffee.
And that was my dad. Actually, I did manage to learn some things I wasn't aware of before, so that's always a bonus. As you just heard, this podcast is about sharing some fantastic life stories, but there are well over a million chronically lonely people in the UK who have no one to share their stories with. If you'd like to know more about ways to change this, then please go online and visit campaigntoendloneliness.org and find out how together we can try to make loneliness a thing of the past. Thanks again to my dad, and also thanks to Acast for hosting this show. See you next time.
The biggest names in tennis are coming to Paris for the most anticipated Roland Garros in years. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled tournament access as the world's top players in tennis face off against each other. Will the veteran champions continue their dominance, or will a fresh face emerge to challenge their legacy on the clay courts? Daily live coverage of this epic showdown begins Monday, May 20th. Don't miss a matchup. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.